Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Very sane, normal people can do some crazy stuff in divorce. And that's why in negotiating, that's another thing to remember. If you're thinking, oh, I don't want to fight, I don't want to, you know, be strategic in my negotiations, you do, because you do want to move the negotiation forward to get it to a point where what is on the table is something that you can live with, because that's when you can finalize it and that's when you can move on.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is Tilting the Scales, How to Gain Leverage in Your Divorce Negotiation. I'm Susan Guthrie.
And I'm Rebecca Zung. So today we're going to be talking about how to gain leverage in your divorce. And part of the reason why we actually decided to do this show is for those of you who watch our episodes on my YouTube channel, which I encourage everyone to go and watch, and you'll feel like you get to know us a little bit better. But I had done a lot of videos before we started this podcast, and one of the ones was how to create leverage in your divorce, and it gets quite a lot of views, and a lot of people are interested in it. I have it on my Facebook page as well. And so we figured we would continue and actually expand on the conversation, because the video is actually only like 8 minutes long or something, or maybe even shorter, I don't know. But so, you know, we have a lot of experience. Our combined experience is more than I'm willing to say.
Rebecca will never let me tell anyone how long we've been practicing together.
Yeah, no, it makes us sound super old, which is not okay. But you're long enough that we definitely know what we're doing. And certainly with our mediation practice the Breaking Free Mediation that we have together, there's a lot that goes into creating leverage in your divorce. And so we thought that we would talk a little bit more about that. People don't realize that negotiation is really the key. Leverage is kind of the key to your whole divorce case. And a lot of people will say, I don't want to fight. As soon as you say leverage, they go, oh, I don't know. That sounds terrible. I don't want to fight. Or maybe you want to fight everything, and so leverage sounds really awesome to you. But either way, it's actually the key to settling your case. It's actually the key to getting what you want. And so it's really, really important to learn how to get leverage in your divorce action.
Yeah, I think it's something that many of our listeners won't know about divorce, but because everyone thinks about divorce as being, you know, going into court and duking it out. But the reality is that 95% of divorce cases actually come to a settlement somehow and never go to trial, never get to that courtroom door. And so the question is really, how did they come to the settlement? Well, it's done through negotiation. It's either negotiated through the attorneys who go back and forth, or if you do it like Rebecca and I do now with mediation, you do it with your mediator, and the two of you sit down and negotiate the terms of your settlement. So the negotiation is probably, and certainly leverage with respect to negotiating, are probably the most important factors, as Rebecca said. But it's a skill that most people don't have because it's not something that we do in our everyday life over and over again. I mean, Rebecca and I do because, again, we're, you know, we've been divorce attorneys for a decent amount of time. And, you know, certainly there are some people whose careers involve negotiation. You know, I always tell, so I think it's just a funny story because my ex-husband, who will forgive me for telling this story because he thinks it's funny too, he was a person, he was an investment banker in finance. He negotiated, he was a deal guy, so he negotiated constantly. But we had gotten a brand new puppy and we went to Petco to buy all that stuff that new puppies need. And it's a lot of stuff. So we're piling all the stuff on the conveyor belt at the checkout. And he sees these little dog toys and he grabs one of them and he puts it on top of the pile and turns to the cashier and says to, I mean, she's like 16 years old. He's like, we should get that toy for free because we're buying all this stuff. And he starts like trying to get her to throw stuff in for free. So there's a person who probably negotiates maybe a little too much in their day-to-day life. But most people, negotiation is a skill and something that they don't immediately think of.
Some people give it away without even, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people would come into my office, especially women, I hate to say it, but, you know, where they would just say, oh, I already told him I don't want any of his 401k or I'm giving up alimony or whatever. And I was like, yeah, why are you doing that? I mean, you know, because you may need that down the road. And when that person turns their tables on you and starts to fight over things that you didn't think you were going to fight about, and now you turn around and say, oh, I want half of that 401k. Now that person is pissed off that, you know, you're going back on your word. So
yeah, that's a really good point, because that happens every case, almost all the time, especially because this is, you know, human nature with divorce. People jump to the splitting stuff up phase without ever sitting down and taking a good look at what it is they need to divide and making sure that they have a good understanding of what it's all worth, right? When it comes to the
financial part of
it.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. Not doing things in a vacuum. I cannot say how many times I have said that. Don't do little parts and pieces at a time because, you know, one thing will affect the other. You know, you may be more willing to give up more of a particular asset or something like that if the other person's willing to give up on alimony or you know, give in on time sharing with regard to the children. I mean, all of those things end up fitting together to make one global settlement.
Yeah, it's a puzzle. I mean, that's what I tell every client. And often what you decide to do, say, with the house is going to depend on what you agree to do regarding support. And, you know, you cannot decide one portion of your agreement without knowing what you're doing in the other. So it's a totality of the circumstances situation. And the negotiation is really the key to the whole thing. So that's why, you know, we thought it was an important thing today to sort of talk about taking the time to think through the process and prepare yourself. Those are really some key elements that we're going to talk about as you go into your divorce negotiation so that you can, you know, one of the things that's important is that the better you handle the negotiation, the more prepared you both are, and the more smoothly that proceeds, the more quickly you're going to get to the end of that process and come to an agreement, which is so important because it ends the financial strain of the divorce process. It you know, the expense of the attorneys or the mediation or whatever that might be. It brings the back and forth to an end and lets you know that you've reached some closure on your issues and you can move forward. And it stops the stress of the divorce process by coming to that agreement. So the negotiations, the all-important factor.
Well, and one of the things I want to just say to those people who are out there who are thinking, well, I don't want to come to the end. I didn't want this divorce in the first place. So why should I be looking for ways to make this over faster? Because I don't want my marriage to be over or whatever. I just want to say to you, first of all, there's no power in being with somebody who doesn't want to be with you. I mean, why do you want to be with somebody who doesn't want to be with you? There's no power in that whatsoever. And number two, it won't make that person want to stay with you if you fight the divorce. It will make them want to be away from you faster. And it will only serve to cost you tons and tons of extra money and heartache. So either way, you want to find a way to resolve your case in a way that's fair. And by the way, I just want to also make a point that gaining leverage doesn't necessarily mean you're out to get the other person. It just means that you want to come to a settlement that you can live with, that you think is fair. And sometimes in order to get to fair, you have to have leverage, because what your version of fair is probably very vastly different than what the other person's version of fair is, at least when you start off.
Yeah, that happens actually quite a bit, where you know what you think is fair, and for some reason you think, even though you've been married to this person for however long, you think they think that's what's fair is also, you know, also, and then you're surprised when they have a different version of fair in their mind. So it's important to sit down and prepare for the whole process. You know, maybe the first place to start is just, what is leverage? You know, maybe you need to sit down and think about this. And really, leverage is a relatively simple thing. It's identifying the elements that create incentive for the other side to settle. And ultimately, you want it to settle the way you want to resolve the case. So that's another important thing, because I find people all the time are not 100%, or they haven't put a lot of thought into what they want to achieve in the divorce. But so what you're looking to do is figure out, what does your spouse, what are their key priorities?
Yeah, what's incentivizing
them? Incentivize them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's behind their, you know, thought process in their negotiation.
And by the way, it may just be that they want out as fast as possible. And you think, great, let me capitalize on that. Let me get you out.
There's huge power in knowing that.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that if that's one of the things that's important to them is speed, which it can be. I've seen many cases where that's an element in that. They just don't want to drag this out and have this be a long, horrible process. Well, speed might cost them something. That's something for you to know. And that's something that's important to know in family matters. So when you're negotiating with Bill in a business negotiation, you don't know Bill that well, but you know your spouse. And that's something that you also can use to figure out what the incentives are for your spouse.
It also means you know how to push each other's buttons very quickly.
Well, that and welcome to litigation, yeah. Right?
That's exactly what to do and say to push the other person's buttons. I mean, even the most, you know, cool level-headed people lose their minds in mediation sometimes because of that.
I think Gabrielle Hartley said that in our a recent episode where she used to work in the family court system, and she said you couldn't believe what normal, sane people would do in the midst of a divorce case. Now, Rebecca and I can believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we've seen it all. Absolutely. I've seen holes being punched in the wall, you know, all sorts of things. So
it makes me think of, I was doing a deposition in one case, and this was earlier days of my practice, and I wanted to be nice. It was an early morning deposition, so I brought a big tray of donuts and pastries and had them in the middle of the conference table, and I was asking questions of the defendant, and he took exception to one of my questions, and he threw a jelly donut at me, and it splatted like
right
in the middle of my chest.
Oh, that's so nice. Lovely. Did he pay for your dry cleaning?
He did, as a matter, or actually his attorney did. I'm pretty sure it probably ended up on his bill. But I did learn not to have any food or in the depositions thereafter.
Oh, nice.
Water was the only thing.
Lovely.
But yes, very sane, normal people can do some crazy stuff in divorce. And that's why in negotiating, that's another thing to remember. If you're thinking, oh, I don't want to fight, I don't want to, you know, be strategic in my negotiations, you do, because you do want to move the negotiation forward to get it to a point where what is on the table is something that you can live with, because that's when you can finalize it and that's when you can move on.
Oh, I will never forget this one time where I had a client who his former wife's his soon-to-be former wife's cell phone, her old cell phone, she left it in the house where he was living. She had moved out. And just on a whim, he decided to plug it in and see, you know, what was on there, whatever. She left it in the house, so it's fair game, right? So he finds all these great, great text messages that we were going to be able to use at trial and ask her about. And no sooner had he sent them to us at our firm that he went ahead and sent them to her and said, ha, 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 see what I found. And I was like, why did you do that?
Well, he was on the way to identifying the leverage that he had.
Like, don't, and then, get a hold of yourself. Don't do that. At least give us a chance to decide how it's going to be used and when. You know,
well, and that's a key point, right? With leverage, I think that's another thing that we see all the time is people get excited, or like your client there just couldn't wait to share their leverage. And that's actually a major no-no in negotiating. You want to hold your leverage close to your vest until it's the right time to put it on the table. And that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I see people making, is that they lay that stuff out there or throw it into the negotiating pool way too early.
Yeah, it really comes down to keeping a lid on your emotions. And we've talked about this before. Nevin Stanley, the forensic specialist we had on recently, had a great quote at the end of the episode where he said, "Emotions melt the fortune." I feel like I want to put that on a bumper sticker or something. It's like, you know.
We're going to have to copyright that and ask Nevin's permission.
Yeah, I mean.
Because it is great.
So true. Because, you know, if you start being driven by emotion in this process, you lose all your leverage fast. It's gone. Because you lose control. You lose control.
Coming up. More from Rebecca and Susan on Tipping the Scales, how to create leverage in your divorce case.
One of the things I always coach them on is they need to think through both what they're looking to get and what they think that their spouse is hoping to achieve in all of this. And really looking to try and figure out how you can get as much of what you want while being able to provide as much of what your spouse wants as incentive to them to get them to agree to what you want. That's really the ultimate win-win.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including how to get divorced without losing your mind, why mindful mediation is your path to a better future.
You go to a judge. The judge has, you know, a very short window to hear everything. They don't know you. They don't know either of you. You get the one day or the 2 days or whatever it is that you get. And that snapshot is all the judge sees. And, you know, the judge may see your spouse as the better one or whatever. You don't know how things are going to be perceived. You're totally throwing S to the fan.
And now we return to today's show.
Well, and when you've lost that, you lose your ability to sit down at the table and move the chess pieces around, really, because when you are negotiating, this goes back to what Rebecca said earlier about it being an overall puzzle that you're moving, you know, sort of moving the pieces and trying to fit them together. So if you know that, oh, I don't know, say something like you really want to keep the marital residence, you really want to keep the house, and you know that something that your spouse wants is that, you know, their retirement funds are really important to them, or knowing that they have money set aside. If you know that, you can be working in the negotiation to perhaps try to maneuver the situation or just negotiate the situation so that you get to keep the house and maybe they get to keep an equal amount of equity in their retirement. You know, rather than turning this into something that becomes about them not wanting you to have the house, because that's another thing that you see, right, Rebecca?
Well, that's the other. Yeah, exactly. If they know what's incentivizing you, then they may hold that at bay just to not give it to you. You know, I mean, just especially if you're dealing with narcissists. I mean, that's another whole area that is they're so psychologically driven. When you're negotiating with somebody who is a narcissist, because you have to kind of trick them into feeling like they got what they wanted and they got it over on you. Yeah. And that's the real art of negotiating there. Because you have to kind of lead them in a way that makes them feel like it was their idea.
But the key to all of that, right, is knowing what they want.
Right.
Knowing what incentivizes them. With a person with narcissistic tendencies, it's looking good and winning. They want to look good to the outside world. They want to appear to be the winner. And they want to have that feeling that they won. But if you know that, you actually have a great deal of negotiating power. Because often it's how you present the offer.
Right.
Saying to him, well, I realize that, you know, maintaining the family lifestyle is very important to you. So if the home is that important to you, I'd be willing to let you keep that if I could do this. But you phrase things in a way so that it's their idea. I know that you've said in the past this was important to you. And you lead them in that
direction. Right. And another really good incentivizer is shame. You know, courtrooms are open and most people can walk in and out. And then whatever happens, you know, the evidence that gets presented gets, you know, put in the court file that anybody can look at. And a lot of people don't want their private life out in the open. They don't want people to know how much money they make or what their assets are, or even worse, if they have some sort of sexually transmitted disease or that they cheated on their spouse or whatever. Most people don't want their private lives broken open and for anybody to take, you know, to splayed out for anybody to come and look at. So that's a huge incentivizer for people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked about that in our When Adultery Can Bite You in the Ass, Even in a No-Fault State episode. I had that client who was motivated to settle his case because he didn't want the ins and outs of the extramarital affair that he had had and the money that he had spent. He had spent a great deal of money on his, at that time, new paramour. He did not want that brought out in a courtroom. And when that evidence was put out there in the deposition, that really, you know, I'll say it, it incentivized him to come to the table. And he put more on the table in alimony and property settlement than perhaps he might have if that incentive had not been there.
Well, I had a...
Rebecca's 100% right.
Yes. Well, I had a former CEO of a big, major Fortune 20 company who had herpes from cheating on his spouse, and he sure as heck did not want the whole world to know about that. So he gave lots and lots. That was a huge incentivizer for him.
Yeah, well, it was like that Tiger Woods case, right? There was a prenup in that case where he probably only had to pay a certain number of millions, but he ended up paying a much larger number than the prenup held because he didn't want to go through a public trial.
Any more of a public trial, right?
Where actual evidence was going to be put on. But that's so shame is one of the incentivizers.
Yeah, I think the first person they were going to call was that waitress at Denny's or wherever that was.
Unfortunately for Tiger, there were so many people to call.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting, but you know, that's another case where people can be motivated, you know, by so many things.
Yes, true.
And it's really one of those things that I always tell clients the minute they come into my office, whether it be for you know, representing them in their divorce, or if they're going through mediation, but I am their review counsel or consulting counsel in the process. One of the things I always coach them on is they need to think through both what they're looking to get and what they think that their spouse is hoping to achieve in all of this. And really looking to try and figure out how you can get as much of what you want while being able to provide as much of what your spouse wants as incentive to them to get them to agree to what you want. That's really the ultimate win-win, you know, especially in a mediation. That's where we're trying to go to get both sides as much as they want. Because in the end, when you negotiate a settlement that you have picked and chosen what you can and cannot live with, those are the agreements that you then go forward and actually live with. They hold up.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I always say you don't want to give in to something where, you know, sometimes you just want it over with, but then, you know, 3 months, 6 months down the road, you're resentful. You feel like the other person took advantage of you. You didn't get the deal you should have or whatever. I mean, first of all, let me just say, neither side is going to get everything they want. I mean, that's just not going to happen. You can't split things in two and feel like you got, you know, everything you wanted. But if you can kind of live with it and it's like basically enough, it's good enough, then you probably ended up, you know, making a good deal for yourself. Anyway, I think those are all really good points. One of the things that I wanted to mention is before you sit down for your mediation, you should have an idea of what your best and worst case scenarios would be if you go to the judge, if you end up in court. Because you're going to want to know that that's kind of like your area of target. You know, you're not going to get your best case scenario because that's the other person's worst case scenario and vice versa. So, you know, if you have an idea of what that range looks like, then that's your target range for how to settle the case.
Yeah. And the key to that would be first knowing again what it is that needs to be divided up. I mean, I'm speaking specifically to the financial side of things here. But, you know, again, going back to that, everyone goes in and starts negotiating. I just had a client call me today and he's like, well, we've already talked about she won't touch my house and I won't touch this for her 401k. But they haven't even decided whether, you know, certain of the assets are marital or not marital. And I'm like, you have to, you know, put the brakes on, back up, figure out exactly what it is that you do need to divide
up. And have actual numbers for each thing. You know, if the house needs to be appraised, get that done. You know, if there's stock options that need to be taken a look at or a 401k that was part marital and part non-marital, get the statements from the date you got married. You know, have your homework done. That makes a huge difference.
I always call it quantify your marital pie before you start slicing it up and divvying out pieces of pie. Because if you start with the divvying up, you're going to end up with someone getting the short end of that pie. They're not going to get their equal share. And, you know, that takes time. That means you don't actually start negotiating until you've done the discovery process. So no matter whether you're litigating or you're mediating or however you're going through divorce, you don't start the negotiation until you've done that quantifying.
Yeah, I actually say like 80% of being getting your negotiation done and being successful in your negotiation, 80% of it is done before you even walk through the door and start having the conversation. Because it's not only the actual physical part of you know, looking at the assets and figuring out the schedules for the kids and that sort of thing, but it's also your own psychological brain and getting a hold of your emotions and figuring out, you know, what you can live with and separating that out from, oh, you know, well, justice means that I should get it all because, you know, she cheated or he cheated or he was an alcoholic or whatever you think. None of that comes into play.
None of it. I mean, it really doesn't. And I know that's hard for people to accept, but your best path forward is to bring the process to a close, this limbo time where you're trying to figure out who's going to get what, who's going to pay what, who's going to receive what, and get to the end of that, again, back to that with that agreement that you can live with, because it's the, you know, either the long drawn out divorce that drains all of your resources and both of you end up with considerably less than what your marital estate had to start with. Those are a worst case scenario, but also those cases like Rebecca referenced at the beginning of the episode, where somebody goes in and they just don't want to fight. And so they give up, you know, oh, I won't touch his pension, or she can have the house, I don't care about the equity. And then I tell you, they wake up a year later after the divorce was finalized and we get the phone call where, how could you let me do that? I can't believe I gave that up. And, you know, we go back to the file and say, oh, no, look, we told you not to do that, or that we didn't advise doing that. But you have to sit down. It's an uncomfortable process, but you need to sit down with as clear a head as you can, think it through, and figure out what you can and can't live with, and negotiate with your spouse to get as much of that as you possibly can.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, you know, the sad thing is that a lot of times people end up having to get beat up by the litigation process before they can finally come to be reasonable. And by that, I mean, like, you know, lose a couple of things in court or spend tons and tons of money on attorney's fees. And then, you know, a lot of times people end up right back where they started.
just a lot poorer.
Just a lot
with
poorer.
A lot less money.
So, you know, learn from what we're saying. You know, don't make this a life lesson for yourself. You know, try to settle early if you can, but not by giving away everything.
I know. We used to call it, I'll let you all in on a little inside divorce lawyer thing. We used to call, when we had clients who were being really unreasonable and very emotional, we used to say they need a little invoice therapy, because they'd get hit with a couple of those monthly bills and suddenly they'd feel a little more sane about just file another motion, or, you know, I want to have that deposition. It all costs a
it's
lot
so
of
true.
Money.
They,
it is invoice
the
therapy.
The clients call you a lot that first month, and then they get their first bill and they go, oh, well, maybe I won't be calling as much. Or they start calling your paralegal because they...
Yeah, she's only $150 an hour.
Exactly.
Same as their therapist. But, yeah. You know, we really want you all to really think about this. If you are going into a divorce, whether you're negotiating through your attorneys, as many of you might be, or if you're going to sit down with your spouse directly in a mediation, make sure you prepare properly and that you use your leverage wisely. Because in the end, that divorce settlement, one that's skillfully negotiated and maximizes the return on both sides, that's going to be the one that gives you the ability to go forward in a good way and not have to keep coming back to renegotiate, or not leave you feeling a lot of regret that you didn't come at it with a clear head and a good path.
Absolutely. Do your homework and don't let emotions melt your fortune.
Thank you, Nevin. Yeah. So, you know, one last thing that we wanted to leave our listeners with off the topic of the negotiations, but just reaching out to our listeners. We've had a really exciting milestone with the podcast. We recently went over 500,000 listens. And
yes,
we're
thank
just really
you
excited.
All for listening.
Yes.
And all of you who are out there listening, we just want to thank you personally. It's amazing. I mean, in just over 6 months to have 500,000 listens is just incredible.
Yeah, it really makes doing this so worth it. We really, you know, as divorce attorneys, we can only help one client at a time. As mediators, we help one couple at a time. And to know that with the podcast, we're able to reach so many of you is just really something that means quite a bit to both Rebecca and I. So we do want to thank you. And we love hearing from you. We have, you know, many of you do reach out through either social media or emails. And we recently just received one email. Rebecca, do you want to?
Well, that one in particular meant so much to us because a gentleman named Tom, and we won't say where he's from or his last name, but his name is Tom. And if you're out there listening to us, Tom, thank you. You know, he really took the time to find both of our emails and write us a really long, thoughtful email about how much our podcast has meant to him. And we love hearing from you guys. You know, keep them coming. And also let us know what you want to hear about, because, you know, we'll do shows based on what you guys want to hear as well. So,
yeah, we love getting the input from you all. And if there are topics that are of interest to you, you know, that's what we're here for. So if you do want to reach out, you can send an email to bfmediation@gmail.com. I'll put that in the show notes. Or you can reach out to either one of us separately. It's Susan@breakingfreemediation.com or Rebecca@breakingfreemediation.com. But really, we love to hear from you. Please, you know, let us know your thoughts. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.